For AntiWar.com and Chaos Radio in Austin, Texas, I'm Scott Horton, and this is AntiWar Radio. There's a brand new report in Vanity Fair called Blood Oil about a conflict brewing in the Niger Delta in Nigeria between the Western oil companies and the Nigerian government on one side and local militia forces on the other. Joining me on the phone is that article's author, Sebastian Younger. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You are the author of the book A Perfect Storm, is that right?
That's right. I wrote it about 10 years ago.
And that's the story that the movie is based on.
That's right.
And so how does it feel to be satirized by The Simpsons just last week?
You know, I didn't see it, but I heard about it. I was immensely flattered.
Oh, that's great, yeah. What a coincidence. I saw that in your on your Wikipedia entry and thought, oh, great. Good movie, too, by the way. Okay, now, before we get into this story, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your reporting in West Africa. It seems from your article that you're very familiar with this area of the world. Is that right?
Yes, I was in Sierra Leone during the Civil War in, I think that was 2000, and also in Liberia during the Civil War in 2003, and now in Nigeria, which isn't technically a war, but it's a very chaotic, violent country.
I see. And now, you begin by pointing out that any disruption or combination of disruptions that cause oil to rise above $120 a barrel for more than a few weeks could cause major problems for the American economy. And that this was the conclusion of a panel that was chaired by now Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. Is that right?
That's right. There was a group that was convened to assess the effects of a rise in oil prices. It was called Oil Shockwave. I had some real luminaries in there, former heads of CIA, et cetera.
And when was this?
This was, God, now I have to, I'm going by memory here. It was a few years ago. I'm not exactly, I can't remember exactly the date. But it was within the past couple, 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And their assessment was that if the militancy in Nigeria completely shut down Nigerian oil production, it could bump the price per barrel of oil over $80 a barrel. Which we could survive, we could recover from. But if there was, if that was followed by a crisis in the Middle East, terrorist attacks on oil infrastructure in the Middle East, that kind of thing, oil prices could go to $120 a barrel. And that, if sustained for any length of time, had the potential to cause a major recession in this country. That was the conclusion of this oil shockwave panel.
And you also write that the kind of oil that's pumped out of the ground in the Niger River Delta is the very light, very sweet crude that's very easy to refine.
That's right. It because it needs very little refining, it's particularly valuable and particularly important to the American market.
And and also, basically, we know, we understand that the American government considers access to other countries or oil that's under the ground in other countries to be vital security interests. And you report in your article that the American military has trained, at least as recently as 2004, with the military of the government of Nigeria, right?
Yes. I mean, the American military does training exercises with many, many countries, and Nigeria, but Nigeria is one of them, and they trained especially for operations on water, and the militancy in the Niger Delta mainly operates on speedboats. So I think that's probably not a coincidence that the training was focused on water combat. I should say, though, that the Nigerian government requested a U.S. Marine presence in the Niger Delta. They requested that President Bush send a contingent of Marines to the Niger Delta to help keep the peace, and President Bush turned that down. That happened just, I think, in the last month or so.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
That's actually very good news. I'm very happy to hear that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's only so many countries you can be involved with militarily. I think we're sort of reaching that point.
Sure. Now, in the country of Nigeria, I'm actually fortunate enough to have some friends who are from there. And my understanding is that basically what we're dealing with is quite a large number of tribes residing within one European-drawn state border, and that is actually, besides the fighting over the resources, that's actually part of the fight going on, is you have one tribe controls the state and ruling over the other tribes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that loosely could describe many, many countries in Africa, and for that matter, Iraq is some, and Afghanistan are some ways similar to that. The ruling elite is mainly from the north, which is Muslim. The south is mainly Christian, and the militancy in the Niger Delta are mostly Christian, but of a sort of tribalist sort. The people that I was with were Ija. They're from the Ija tribe, and their belief was a mix of traditional Ija belief and Christianity. It was a sort of strange hybrid.
I see. And now, basically what we're talking about here, ultimately, what you talk about in your article, Blood Oil for Vanity Fair, is that you have Western oil companies like Shell Oil, for example, who are pumping all this oil out of the creeks, basically, in the Niger River Delta. And basically the locals are getting nothing. The people actually lived on that land before the oil started being pumped out from under it are getting nothing except environmental devastation. And
that's
so
right.
They're fighting back,
basically. That's a very short
version.
The hundreds of billions of dollars of oil are getting pumped out of the Niger Delta. But the oil company, the multinational oil companies, have contracts with the Nigerian government. And from 60 to 90% of the profits of that oil goes right back to the Nigerian government.
Right, but not to the people who lived on the land that the oil's being pumped out from under, right?
That's right. I mean, the oil companies are absolutely fulfilling their contracts as written with the Nigerian government. The real problem, I mean, as I understand, you know, I was an outsider to an incredibly complicated problem, but my understanding of it was that the Nigerian government, which is just unbelievably corrupt, fails to pass along the oil revenue to the Niger Delta where the oil is drilled. And keep in mind, the Nigerian government takes in roughly $1 billion a week, not a million, a billion with a B, $1 billion a week in oil revenue.
They call it in your article uncompensated appropriation of land for drilling.
That's right. I mean, there's many, many bad things that go on in the Niger Delta. They are the Nigerian government, by constitutional law in Nigeria, can allocate tribal land to oil companies who want to drill, and that's one issue that the tribes are trying to address in court. But interestingly, I mean, it's a very complex country. It's sort of semi-democratic, so the Nigerian courts have ruled that Shell owes $1.5 billion. To the Ija Nation for compensation for environmental damage. So there is a sort of tug of war within the Nigerian government over this oil money.
Right. And now you talk about in your article, you focus on a group called MEND, and that's of the Ija tribe, you say?
The MEND is mostly Ija. The Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta is what MEND stands for.
And you say that their goal ultimately is to shut down all oil production in the region, or at least they say that?
Well, their goal is to receive compensation for the oil that's drilled there, and what they call control of their resources, which means control of the oil drilling in the area. If they don't receive that, they say that they will completely shut down oil production. So they're proposing a sort of one or the other situation.
Right, and they already have resorted to violence in quite a few circumstances, correct?
Well, they've carried out sabotage on oil infrastructure. They have regular shootouts with the Nigerian military, but the gunfire isn't particularly uncommon in that area anyway, between all kinds of groups. And they have taken hostages off the oil rigs, Western hostages that they essentially, there are many militant groups in the Delta, and typically the hostages are sold back to the oil companies for a lot of money. MEND is now holding four or five Western hostages and saying, we don't want money for these people, we want political concessions. And that's a departure from the norm. That's a new behavior by these groups.
Well, now, weren't they just in the news for releasing some Korean workers, right?
That wasn't MEND. That was that was a different militant group. And keep in mind that MEND is probably the most principled of these groups, the most politically oriented, but the gamut of these groups runs all the way down to completely criminal enterprises that are really just carrying out kidnappings for money and dressing it up as a political statement. So there really is sort of the whole gamut. I don't know who took the recent hostages, but they were released almost certainly because money was paid.
And now this is actually something you touch on there. It's actually, I think, one of the most interesting threads in your article, that these groups that basically started out with what even some of the Shell employees told you were legitimate grievances, that, you know, oil is seeping into the water that they fish from and that kind of thing, that now the criminality and the corruption has run on for so long that everybody has a vested interest in the status quo now. If I can read this one little part, you say, under the current system, everyone involved in the oil business, from corrupt government officials to military commanders to the militants themselves, makes vastly more money than he would in a transparent economy. And the bunker, that is, stolen and smuggled oil, isn't lost to the market. It simply becomes an additional tax borne by the oil companies for doing business in Nigeria.
That's right. I mean, there's about $1.5 billion worth of oil that's getting pumped out of the creeks every week in Nigeria. With that kind of money floating around, corruption becomes extremely lucrative, and as I said, in some ways, all the individuals involved are making more money than they would if everything was by the book. That's one of the that wrongdoing is carried out by people in the multinational oil companies, by the government, and by the militants. They're all complicit in that. That's one of the reasons it's so hard to change.
Now, this is part of what you refer to in the article as the resource curse.
That's right. That's a phrase that's been around for a while. It's been noted that in Africa, countries with valuable natural resources, oil, minerals, diamonds, for example, in Sierra Leone, often are countries that are those are the countries that are the most unstable, the most likely to have civil wars, the most corrupt, with the lowest standard of living. And the reason is, because with something that's so valuable, corruption is almost guaranteed within the government, and there is little attention paid to developing other sources of income, promoting education, that kind of thing. People fight over the resources, civil war occurs, and those countries that are blessed with these very valuable resources inevitably fall behind other countries, such as Senegal, that doesn't have anything, but they have a very calm, peaceful, stable government and society. And it's just a strange irony in not exclusively in Africa, but there are many examples in Africa of great resources actually being in some ways a kind of curse.
Right. The people with the political power get to benefit, and the rest of the people end up even worse off.
Right. I mean, the government gets so distracted by simply scooping up revenue that comes in from the diamond trade or the oil business, that they essentially don't develop other aspects of the economy, and they don't invest in education and that kind of thing. The whole system breaks down.
Right. Now, I'm really not much of a businessman, but if I try to think like one now, then, you know, say you and I are in the boardroom at Shell, it seems to me like it would be a good idea to treat the people whose land we're pumping oil from under with respect in the first place, so that we don't have to deal with a bunch of armed thugs in boats running around threatening our investment.
Yeah, that's true. Keep in mind, I'm hardly here to defend the oil industry, but it is an incredibly complicated situation. And from the point of view of the oil companies, They're saying, look, we're fulfilling our contracts with the Nigerian government. I mean, the government is who we do business with, and we're fulfilling our contracts. What more do you want? That's in theory. The reality is, if they put a little bit more money into these communities, it would go a long way towards buying goodwill. And in fact, that has started to happen. I think it's just so late, it's too little too late. I mean, it's like the surge in Iraq. I mean, it's not enough money, and it's 40 years too late in this process. So I'm not sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure it won't work in the long run. I think ultimately the Nigerian government basically has to clean itself up, or this problem will just continue.
You mentioned in the article that some of the Western companies like Halliburton have resorted to paying bribes to the militants, and I guess it seems pretty obvious that money's just going to be spent on guns that are going to be turned around on them after the fact.
Well, bribes go all over the place. the AGIP was, I was told by a member of MEND that the Italian oil company AGIP had paid money to help MEND, quote, repair pipelines. Well, you know, bribes are dressed up as all kinds of things, and obviously I don't have access to verify that kind of information, but that's the kind of story that's floating around the Delta. Western business interests, I think, have primarily paid bribes to the Nigerian government for securing local contracts, that kind of thing. So, but the bribes go in every direction. I mean, MEND pays bribes to the Nigerian military so that they can they'll look the other way when stolen oil is not MEND, but the militants, so that the military will look the other way while stolen oil is escorted out of the creeks. I mean, the money flows in absolutely every conceivable direction.
I'm Scott Horton. You're listening to Anti-War Radio. My guest is Sebastian Younger. He's got a new piece for Vanity Fair called Blood Oil. It's about the conflict going on in the Niger Delta, in the country of Nigeria, which is, I believe, the eighth largest producer of oil on Earth. And now in this article, you talk about, Sebastian, your trip up the Nile Delta to the villages where you actually met some of these militants and even had your very life threatened. You want to tell us the story?
Yes, we went into the creeks with the assurances of a man who has contact with MEND, with the militants. He said he would call ahead to guarantee our safety. No journalists have ever been allowed by MEND to visit the camps. No one's interviewed them. They basically have fenced out the foreign press. So we were very excited that we were going to maybe get a first interview, the first photos with these guys. We showed up in this village as instructed, and MEND had not been alerted that we were coming. They had not received the message. They thought we were spies, maybe U.S. military intelligence. They didn't know what. And they descended on us and basically seized us. And it was a very frightening situation.
You write about being in the center of the village surrounded by men with guns pointed at you.
Yeah, and these guys, I mean, as a reporter, I've been around plenty of guys with guns, but these guys were particularly scary. I mean, they're Ijaw tribesmen, and they have a very strong belief in a god called Igbesu, who's their god of war. They sort of devote their lives to him, and part of this belief involves wearing a lot of white chalk war paint.
Yes, and the pictures, by the way, are on the website and in the magazine, the new Vanity Fair. Is it the February or the January issue?
It's the February issue that came out in early January.
Right, and it's very interesting, the pictures of these guys with white paint all over themselves. The caption, I guess, says, these are magical symbols to protect them from bullets?
Yes, they believe that they're bulletproof if they follow these certain procedures. And they're decorated with this, frankly, terrifying white war paint and all these amulets and fetishes that they tie to themselves. And it's just visually quite impressive and terrifying. And so those are the guys who seized us, and we were accused of being spies, and that's not a good thing. And eventually we were released by the command of a guy named Jomo, who is their spokesman and apparently their leader. He might not even be in Nigeria. No one knows who or where he is, but he really does call the shots. And he called on their... Word got out that we were there, and he called on their cell phone. The cell phones work in the creeks, and he called and said that we were to be released. And a couple of weeks later, by emailing Jomo, we got permission from Jomo to go back into that area. MEND was told we were coming, and they were told to receive us well. And we were able to go to their camp to interview their leader on the ground, a guy named who called himself Brutus, to take photographs, everything we wanted. And that really was the first visit by the press to MEND. MEND has been in existence for about a year now.
And also another thing featured in the photographs and also that you discuss in the article is that these MEND, Ijaw tribesmen, militiamen, are armed to the teeth with the brand newest East European rifles. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, the weapons were very, very good. I mean, in Liberia and Sierra Leone, often the fighters just carried old AK-47s. There's a lot of that floating around West Africa. They're very cheap. These weapons carried by men were very high quality belt-fed machine guns made in Czechoslovakia. Used to be Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic. They're not the kind of weapons you usually see in West Africa. They're expensive. They're high quality. Clearly, someone is arming these people very, very well.
Yeah, it seemed like a scene right out of Lord of War.
Yes, exactly. And you know, the oil money that flows through the area is sufficient to buy very, very good weapons, and that's one of the reasons it's so flush with cash. That's one of the reasons you see such good weapons there.
Now, something that you mentioned in your article is that the first four oil men that were kidnapped by these militiamen in Nigeria were not ransomed, but subjected to a lecture for 4 days straight?
That's right. They were held, I think they were held for more like a couple of weeks, but again, I'm going by memory. I can't recall exactly, but they were...
Yeah, well, I only read it again last night, so how should I be able to remember?
I can't remember exactly how long they were held. Typically, they were held 10 days or 2 weeks, but at any rate, they were not held for ransom. They were basically... It was a message to the oil companies: look, we can take your people anytime we want. They have never hurt a hostage. MEND has never laid a hand on a hostage. But they do lecture them, and they lecture them about the social injustice in the Niger Delta, that the fact that none of the oil money gets back to these incredibly poor local communities. There's terrible pollution from the oil drilling that's killed the fish stocks that they rely on. And the Nigerian government has been completely irresponsible and delinquent in providing even minimal social services. There's no clean drinking water in these villages. There's no sanitation. There are no schools. There's no medical facilities. There's absolutely zero. And of course, that describes many villages in Africa. But I think what's particularly anger-inspiring in this case is that these people, these very poor people, all they have to do is tilt their head up and look across the channel, and they see an oil rig. Right. And it's the juxtaposition of great wealth and great poverty that I think is fueling this this militancy.
And, you know, maybe it's, you know, a little bit too much for the libertarian clique, but it seems to me like a basic question of property rights, that if the oil companies, instead of hiring the government of Nigeria to steal these people's land and turn it over to them, had in fact just bought the land from the people who live there or paid them directly... money for the oil that they were pumping out, this would all be fine. But what happened was Shell Oil and the rest of these guys hired the Nigerian government to socialize their costs for them, basically, to steal the land and then turn it over to them.
Yeah, I mean, true, but then again, it's a sovereign country, and Shell can't just decide who they want to negotiate with. They really do have to go through the government. There really isn't much choice there.
Yeah. Now, are these militias, I know MEND is only one of a few different ones, do they represent an actual threat to the state monopoly in Nigeria, or if it really came down to it, the state military would come in and wipe these people out?
Well, I'm not sure. The Nigerian military, if they really threw themselves at the problem... they could achieve a temporary dominance. I mean, much like I think the U.S. military achieved a temporary dominance in Iraq. But that's different from a long-term dominance, a long-term solution. I think what would happen is that they would, the militants, if the Nigerian military really went at them, it would, first of all, it would drain military resources from the rest of the country, which is already incredibly unstable. So things might fall apart in the north, for example, which would be even more disastrous to the government. But even if that didn't happen, they would achieve a temporary victory. They can't possibly put 100,000 men in the creeks permanently. They just don't have those kind of resources or organization, for that matter. And men would come back. The militants would come back. And on top of it, these soldiers, they're not local. They're from the north. They make very little money. The militant groups are stealing an enormous amount of oil out of the pipelines, which can't be protected. the 6,000 kilometers of pipelines just by, owned by Shell alone in the creeks. You can't possibly protect all of that. So they suck oil out of the pipelines, sell it on the international market. They have millions and millions of dollars, and they simply, in situations where they can't outshoot the Nigerian military, they just buy them. They just basically rent them and tell them to go away. And that, ultimately, money talks in Nigeria, and that's how the situation would eventually, I think, play out if they really tried to impose their will.
For now, though, you write in the article that the Mend Ijaw tribesmen, to a man, seem to be expecting a major crackdown in the near future.
Yes, the militancy has been going for, Mend has been in existence for about a year. It's been steadily escalating its activities, they say, because the government has not been responsive to reasonable calls for negotiation, and that they are planning a major offensive. It was initially planned for last November. It didn't happen. I think there were some internal divisions, some internal disputes within Mend. I think it's part of Mend, I think, sort of splintered off. So it didn't have, the offensive did not happen in November, and I'm told to expect it in sometime in 2007, but who knows?
Now, I guess this brings up the question of whether bloody oil is bad for the engine. Maybe they can refine all that out, you know.
Right.
Well, and you mentioned, I mean, particularly, you said these guys haven't harmed their hostages, but at least back in the 1990s, the Nigerian government came and you report massacred 2,000 people in retaliation for some of this kind of behavior.
Yeah, there were the original community protests against the activities of the oil companies were back in the 90s, and the protests were put down very, very violently in some cases, hundreds, perhaps thousands. I mean, it's very hard to confirm those figures, but certainly way, way too many people were killed by a very heavy-handed Nigerian military. And it blew up in their faces. I mean, that did not work. It gave rise to an even more potent militancy. I think the Nigerian government knows that.
Well, now, if somebody placed a phone call from Shell headquarters or even from the oil ministry in Nigeria and asked you your honest opinion about, you know, what can be done, you said a military solution from the point of view of the government or Shell could only work in the short term at best. What's the solution to this problem? The world needs that oil one way or another. What's the best way to go about solving this?
If I were just to sort of play God here, if I were the multinational oil companies, if I somehow could become that entity, I would say to the Nigerian government, we're going to take X percentage of the oil revenue that by contract we give to you, 30%, whatever it is, and we're going to route it, we're going to skip you, it's going to go straight into the Nigerian, into the Niger Delta, into the communities, and we're going to use it to fund community projects and build schools and clean water wells, electricity for the villages. In other words, I think the oil companies in some ways have to take over the functioning of government that the Nigerian government is not carrying out. Some of the duties that the Nigerian government are not carrying out.
In terms of providing services, rather
than, right.
Not the enforcement functions, but the services.
Exactly.
Right.
Who knows if that represents a great loss of revenue to the government. I don't know if they would go along with it. The other possibility is for Shell and the other multinationals to say, all right, forget it. We're not doing business with you. It's too dangerous here. You're too corrupt. It's just not worth the hassle, and to pull out of Nigeria. That's already started to happen. The problem there is that you have companies that are even less responsible than Western companies. Chinese oil concerns are now moving into the vacuum in Nigeria as Western oil companies pull out. The Nigeria has just signed a deal with the Iranians to build offshore oil rigs. Those people are going to be even less responsible than Western oil companies are. So that's, pulling out isn't really a solution either. So it's a very, very complicated problem.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Everybody, Sebastian Younger writes for Vanity Fair, the brand-new February issue. features his article Blood Oil. And also check out his book, A Perfect Storm. Take your guns to town.